Welcome, everyone, to episode 443 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we have an NBA Finals, y'all. Last time we recorded, the Suns were up 2-0 going to Milwaukee. It is now 2-2 after Giannis's superhuman block going back to Phoenix for Game 5. So we will get into what happened in Games 3 and 4. We'll also look ahead to Game 5 and the rest of the series, and then we'll wrap up talking about some Team USA basketball as well. Before we get into all that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today is my very, very overheated co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, my man?
You know what? Despite the fact that I'm literally going to die during the recording of this episode, it's actually going very, very well for one reason, Brian. I have learned that if I ever want to start an investigation upon something, I just look at the Portland Trailblazers and I do the exact opposite.
Yeah, that situation is a mess. If y'all are not following Sean Hyken, who writes for Bleacher Report, I would highly encourage checking him out on Twitter, at Hyken. He's been kind of following just all the complete disaster as it unfolds. I thought you were going to say because you watched the new Space Jam, that's why things were going on more.
I have not watched that yet, and I'm pretty sure that after I do, I'm going to send you a DM going, what did I just watch? Why did I waste 2 hours? And I will never watch this again.
We will have a full Space Jam review on the next episode. With no Warner Media slander coming from me. I will be very, very pro Space Jam, I'm sure. We also have a special guest today joining us. And thankfully, he came on now instead of 2 episodes ago, because the tenor of the conversation would have been very different. But Ty Windisch, the host of the Eurostep podcast, one of the best Bucks follows out there. Ty, genuinely, how are you right now?
Honestly, doing great, which is funny because mid third quarter of game 4, I was down in the dumps. I was like, oh man, a slog. This terrible Chris Paul game, and the Bucks are going to blow it anyway. Booker in foul trouble, everything else. And then one of the most, probably the most wild ride of the season for the Bucks is that fourth quarter. Just hard to even recap it quickly to start a podcast how much happened. And as they've done all year, the Bucks found a way to keep their hopes for a championship alive, and that's this team's greatest asset as a group. I mean, the paint scoring, strategic-wise, that's what they do, but they always just find a way, and I think that's why it's super encouraging that they're tied 2-2 now. This is a team that all postseason has just figured stuff out and gotten wins. I mean, the only times they've lost late in the series was KD's ridiculous Game 5, and the game Giannis got hurt. So feels good right now to support the Bucks because seems like they might actually do this thing.
Yeah, I mean, the momentum is certainly all on their side. We haven't recorded since before game 3. So what in the last 2 games, Ty, has really stood out to you? Like, how did the Bucks turn this thing around and get back into this series?
Yeah, I think the way they defend has really changed a lot, and it's really helped them. Like, game 1 especially, they were giving whatever switches the Phoenix guards wanted, and those guys were feasting. I mean, Book wasn't, I think, great in game 1. CP was phenomenal. But, you know, especially in that third quarter of the first game, and then they started dropping, which was really, the deep drop is not going to work in this series. I think we're seeing Brook Lopez minutes trend down and Bobby Portis minutes trend up for a reason. Even though Portis isn't a great defensive player, he's just more switchy, more mobile, everything else. But they're making Phoenix hit shots. That's what changed. I think game 1, they were letting the Suns dictate the matchups, dictate their shot selection a lot more. Game 2, the Bucks are finding ways to go, you're not going to get Pat Connaughton or Brook Lopez every single time. You're going to get those guys sometimes. You're not going to get them every time. You got to go through Drew. You got to go through PJ. Got to go through Giannis. Got to go through Chris, who's really improved defensively. So I think that is really what changed, because Phoenix's offense is now more of a slog. They're turning the ball over a ton. And even though the Bucks' offense is also kind of a slog, when they can get fast break points, when they can get second chance points, suddenly they can win on the margins. And that's what we've seen in the last couple games.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think a number of things have stood out to me. And we were saying going into game three, you know, especially given at that point, Torrey Craig's status was uncertain. You know, Dario tears his ACL in game one. We were saying DeAndre Ayton's going to be a big key to this series moving forward, because if you can get him off the floor, if you can get him in foul trouble, all of a sudden the Bucks have a massive size advantage over the Suns. And we saw that play out in game three when Ayton did get into foul trouble, and that's kind of when the Bucks broke that game open. It wasn't as bad in game four in terms of his foul trouble, but again, his effectiveness compared to the first couple games of the series has definitely dwindled. So, you know, what do you see the Bucks doing other than, you know, having Giannis have go-go gadget arms, being able to really hinder Ayton specifically?
I think they're the Bucks smalls and helpers have, since game one and game two for sure, and even the early minutes of game three, they've just done a much better job. Making Ayton go through them and really getting positioning inside on him. I felt like the earlier games, he was just getting directly to the rim. Like, there was no resistance. And now the guys like PJ Tucker, like Chris Middleton, they're at least sizing up a bit and making him have to finish. And I thought, you know, I saw this take. I forget who tweeted it. Sorry, I'm stealing someone's take on Twitter. But, like, he was trying to finesse over, you know, kind of spin back, hook shot, little fadeaway jumper type stuff. And it was like, he has to go through guys. And I think, you know, maybe that's a simple adjustment for the Suns, and he starts doing that in game five, and it's a problem again, especially if Lopez is going to play less. Because obviously, you know, if you get Lopez back there with him, you're not too worried if there's no separation. Lopez is fine there. And Giannis is too. But it's, you know, if you're switching pick and rolls or whatever else is when the size disadvantage becomes a thing. So, it'll be interesting to see. I do think the thing with Ayton is he is very much, he's like the ideal center for a Chris Paul, Devin Booker team, because he always just takes what's given to him. And I think that sounds like a negative, but it's a big positive. We've all seen these centers who try to do way too much. Everyone just wants, you know, the rim-running DeAndre Jordan-esque center if you're not literally like a Jokic or Embiid-type player. And Ayton is just going to do that, but when the Bucks stop giving him easy looks, he stopped taking advantage. So I think that's going to be crucial, of just making him beat somebody as opposed to just getting to the rim.
Yeah. And I think another aspect that has changed, especially as the series has progressed further, is the play of Chris Paul. You know, as you said, he was phenomenal in game one. Ever since then, Drew has drawn that defensive assignment a lot more. It seems like Drew is just in his jersey and is really starting to frustrate him, forcing carelessness out of Chris Paul. That is not what you expect out of him. So what do you think? I mean, how would you evaluate what Drew has brought to the table, even though, you know, especially in game four, offensively, he's been struggling?
Offensively, he's been terrible. And it's funny because there's this case out there, like he's doing so much defensively, it's fine. He doesn't, and I'm like, sure, he doesn't have to score 40 points, but like, make layups, please. I think that can be done. But no, defensively, I mean, what he's done to CP is phenomenal, and now you're seeing late in game four, like, he had already neutralized CP. They switched him on to Booker. Like, all right, that's kind of taken care of now. You can try on Booker now. He is fighting through screens. He is harassing, especially Chris Paul. And I think, you know, for CP, he's great. I think he's going to have better games in this series. But you can see that combo of his size and his age really showing. And I think that's why Drew has had so much success. Like, Drew can do well on Book, too. But Booker, it's almost, like, it almost doesn't matter how well you cover him. Like, I feel like he just hits shots or he doesn't. Mm-hmm. He's much bigger. With CP, I think you can get more control over how much you can harass him. And I think that's swinging the series right now. I mean, if Drew's offense comes alive too, like we saw in game three, it feels like the Bucks are going to have quite the advantage if he can continue to play that kind of defense on CP. I just think it gets really hard for the Suns if it's like Booker has to do almost everything and hopefully role players all step up. So honestly, like, I could see the argument for putting Drew on Booker earlier. I think you just keep taking CP out of the game if you can and make everybody else try to beat you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we saw, you know, Devin Booker finishes with 42 points on the night. So it's similar to what some teams have tried earlier in the playoffs, you know, the Sixers with Trae Young and even, I forget, it was the Clippers or the Nuggets with CP, where it's like, we're just going to have this guy go off for 40, but we're going to prevent him from doing damage as a playmaker, prevent his teammates from doing damage as a playmaker. So, more before we go into Game 5 and moving forward in this series, I wanted to talk about Chris Paul a little bit more, because it was so predictable that this would happen. But as soon as he started struggling in this series, the Chris Paul playoff choker narrative has started to bubble up again, despite his heroics throughout the play. Like what he did in Game 4 against the Nuggets and Game 6 against the Clippers. Like he closed out two series to get them to the finals. But now he's struggled, especially in the last two games. And here we are back to square one. So what do you think about, you know, this whole narrative bubbling up again?
You know, the thing about narratives is that they can be so dumb and there could be no truth to them. This is one of those situations. I mean, obviously, Chris Paul is one of the greatest point guards in NBA history. He proved his worth 10 times over this season. There's a reason he's in line for what most expect will be a 3-year contract extension worth $100 million. I mean, this dude is that good. And look, looking at his numbers overall for the series, he's still at 21 plus points, 8 plus assists, 53% from the field, 44% from downtown. Like, he is not the problem. Like, yeah, is it concerning that he hasn't stepped up? And I don't even want to say stepped up. Like, he's been neutralized by Drew Holiday. That matters. But no, I think the narrative is lazy. I think it's dumb. It's something Stephen A. Smith or Skip Bayless would bring up and get some traction off of. But smart pundits should never go to that. I don't think it's him choking. I don't think it's him not executing his plays. I think he did have just an off game in Game 4. Like, some of his passes were just not online. And you know what? That's allowed. You are allowed to not always play perfect basketball. That's okay. So, was it tough because it was a close game? Absolutely. Was it everything that did the difference? Was that the core reason for why they lost? No, of course not. So, lazy narrative. There's no truth to it. It's just an unfortunate two games, and that's it.
Yeah. It feels like, you know, I mean, this is what NBA Twitter does. It gets off a joke, so that's fine. I'm guilty of it, too. But like, maybe having an all-world defender in Drew Holiday guard him for the last three games, maybe that's contributing to those struggles to some extent. Like, we have to at least consider some of the context if we're going to bash a guy for struggling and being guarded by Drew Holiday, who is widely renowned as one of not only the most underrated defenders in the NBA, right, but, like, especially one of the best point-of-attack defenders. This was the obvious adjustment for the Bucks to make after Game 1. To their credit, they did it. And now we're seeing it pay off. And as Ty said, now it's like you almost have to pick your poison. Like, which one of these guards do you want Drew to be on? Because we saw Devin Booker, especially in that third quarter in Game 4. You know, he struggled in Game 3, and you knew he was going to come back strong in Game 4. But to that extent, I was just... It's like shades of vintage Kobe or Michael in that court, which is like hitting absolutely insane fall away shots, off balance shots, off one leg from any spot on the court. So it was good to see him get back going. Or I guess, Ty, you probably don't feel the same way, but from a neutral perspective, you know, it's good to see him going again.
But remember, this was Klay Thompson, right? This was his draft comparison. He did this without hitting a three. I don't understand why we stick with that narrative. I still see people going, oh, he's the next Klay. Are we still pretending like he's not one of the better pick-and-roll off-guards in the league, like one of the better playmakers? Like, what in what world are you guys, not you guys specifically, but people, how are people still looking at Devin Booker right now and going, oh, yeah, that's Klay? How? How is that? Help me understand that.
Yeah, he's certainly more like new age Kobe, at least offensively. The thing I hate quickly on the narratives, like the Chris Paul, whatever, is like nobody gets credit, right? Like Drew doesn't get the credit for all the work. And even the play at the end of the game when he lost the ball, pretty sure Giannis poked it away, or like Giannis showed and made the play there to force the turnover. And it's like, oh, CP just lost it. Like, no, Giannis made one of his 14 great defensive plays in the last like 5 minutes, and that's what happened. Like, I just don't like that we don't. I mean, Giannis obviously getting credit for the block, but I just don't like that narrative, because A, it obviously is, you know, slanderous to CP. But B, it's like suddenly the Bucks didn't do anything, you know? Like, oh, he just went and failed. It just happened. Like, no, it didn't. Like, so much went into all those things happening.
It's because it doesn't give page views or clicks or whatever. There are no clicks to be gained in Giannis Antetokounmpo made great defensive play compared to did Chris Paul choke? Is his time over? Will the NBA change forever? Like, it is what it is. It's a dirty, dirty business we're in.
Yeah. So before we move into game five, we have to take a couple minutes and just have the block point 2.0 appreciation, because that is one of, I was watching it on my phone. We're like trying to go to bed. My wife's asleep next to me. The baby's asleep. So I couldn't even see it blown up until the next morning. So I don't really, like, I couldn't get to appreciate it in real time, but now having watched that clip at least 7,000 times yesterday, Ty, like, what went through your head when you saw that in real time?
I mean, I just couldn't believe it. You know, when the lob gets thrown up, you just assume, like, oh, man, like, tie ball game, it could go either way from here, the way Book is playing. And then it was just, you know what, I think the best part of it for me was we had conversations after game two and game three on the pod, like, we don't have to ask the question if Giannis can be the best player on a championship team anymore, and that's been a question for a long time because of his skill set. And this, to me, was further proof of that, because it was an off night for him. He didn't look good most of the game by his standards, still 26, 14, 5, 2-2 or whatever the hell. But for him, after a couple 40 burgers, especially just didn't look that engaged in the first half, something was just off. Like you said, Mort, sometimes guys are just off and it happens.
Right.
But seeing him, like, in that moment, and really, I saw a clip somebody shared of a bunch of his fourth quarter defensive possessions on the pick and roll, like, and that's when I was like, okay, I'm not going to talk about Brook Lopez minutes anymore, because Giannis just neutralized, like, five straight pick and rolls, either by like getting to the ball handler or the roll man. And as he showed on that play, he can do both. And that's so massive for the Bucks this series, knowing he can have that kind of impact on pick and rolls, because we know how much Phoenix loves them. But it was just like he dug deep on an off night, on a bad knee that he hyperextended like less than 2 weeks ago, and just he made a game-winning play. I think Middleton scored 10 straight. Middleton hit all the winning buckets. But I think that play is really what pushed the game into, you know, oh, Bucks are taking this versus, oh, this could go either way late. Like, it was such a momentum shift, and it was a four-point shift, too. Should have been five if a foul, or it would have been still been four. Also should have led to Booker fouling out, but, you know, that is what it is, you know, NBA out here. But it was so incredible to see, though, just because we've all seen Giannis make these wild athletic plays, freaky athletic plays, but in that moment, in that game, seeing him be that locked in and still capable of doing something like that, it just reaffirmed the belief that, like, A, this guy's not going to let the team lose. He's going to do every single thing he can. And B, like, he can dig deep and come up with a play like this. Two more like that, and it might be, you know, first championship in 50 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved his quote afterward, too, where he kind of explained his, like, thought process in real time, and he was saying, like, Book had the ball in one hand, so he knew he wasn't going to shoot it, he knew the lob was coming, and he's just like, I had to just jump at the rim and pray, and, like, if Ayton tried to shoot a jumper, it's goaltending, like, he said I thought I was going to get dunked on.
Yes, but key part,
And, like, he had a quote, I think it was going into game four, where he was talking about kind of his fearlessness about, like, he doesn't care if he fails, like, if he misses a shot, he's not afraid of it. It's just like he's gonna go right back and do it again. So you could see that in action on this play, like how many guys not only are physically capable of making that play, but are willing to put themselves out there knowing the stakes, knowing that if DeAndre Ayton dunks on his head, ties the game with a minute left, and the Suns go on to win that game, go up 3-1, like, that's going to be, you know, as much as the narrative has shifted toward him now, it could have gone very much the other way. It's just like, it was a phenomenal, I mean, it's a legacy defining play. Like, I don't want to get into, you know, he's going to have a ton of opportunities to continue building his legacy, but like, that is the defining play of his career right now, much like the block for LeBron in game 7 of the 2016 finals. Like, if we will think of one play with LeBron James' career, that will be the first one on the list. Right now, Giannis, that block as well.
Well, so I have some things here about that, because it seems that we're calling Giannis' block, you know, 2.0 or something else. We're trying to not call it the block. It was better than LeBron's. It was much better than LeBron's block. I think LeBron should basically just accept whatever secondary title we give that block, and then just kind of give Giannis the block moniker, because it was better. Like, think about it. This was blocking DeAndre Ayton over the rim instead of blocking, you know, 136-year-old Andre Iguodala on a layup.
Yeah. We at the Eurostat Podcast Network are referring to it as the sun block out of respect to the block, because, like, I think Giannis's block was certainly, like, more impressive in itself. LeBron's being closing out game 7. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that maintaining the block. I think
the stakes. You know,
hopefully Bucks in 6. We don't even get to 7. Like, if Giannis has another one in game 7, we can revisit the combo. But and it is obviously the biggest game in the last 50 years for the Bucks. But still, closing game 7 against the super team, down 3-1. LeBron can keep the block. We're cool with the sun block. Honestly, if nobody outside of Milwaukee remembers at all, but the Bucks get a championship, that works too. Like, it's fine with us, man.
Well, see, the stakes, I agree with you with. I agree. Yeah. That, like, the stakes were just bigger. I'm looking at it in isolation and just off athletic prowess.
Way more impressive.
Right?
Way more impressive.
Yeah.
And I think it's really integral to who Giannis is, like, that fearlessness to fail. Like, that's what defines him as a player. The great clip, if you guys haven't seen it from practice, where he's talking to P.J. Tucker, like, I airballed 2 in a row in Oklahoma City. You know, I've missed X straight free throws. I've been dunked on, like... And it's always funny to me when someone does share a clip of Giannis getting postered, and it's like, he doesn't care at all. Like, if he saw that, he would probably laugh. It does not matter to him. I think that's what makes him great. I think there's different greatness for all sorts of players. For him, it's just that ability to, like, very genuinely be like, if I fail, it's fine. I'm going to come back the next possession and keep playing with that intensity. It's like, so it's, you know, you look at, I mean, not to get too Sixers slandery, but you look at some other players in the league, and it's very easy to draw comparisons. Like, not everyone is like that, and it helps a lot if you are great and are like that. It can make a huge difference.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. Every time one of these quotes comes up from Giannis, that is my first reaction, is just, like, strap Ben Simmons to a chair and make him watch these clips for the next 3 months. Because, like, that is, I mean, beyond their physical differences, you know, Giannis is longer, but, like, that is, the mindset alone is the biggest separation between the two guys. Because, like, in terms of what they bring to the table physically, they play similar styles. Like, Ben could be not as good as Giannis, but, like, not super far behind. But because he's afraid to get hacked, or he's afraid to shoot jumpers and miss, like, he's just afraid of being embarrassed, it seems. That isn't the case for Giannis, and you're totally right. That's what... You know, like, his physical gifts make him great, but, like, that's what elevates him into that elite tier where he's just like, I don't care. He's like a great quarterback. Like, you know, we always hear great quarterbacks, if they screw up, they can put the play behind them and just move on to the next play instead of, like, ruminating on it and letting it fester in their mind. Giannis is very much that same way. I was talking with Tony East of Locked On Pacers yesterday on Twitter, and we were just like, how many guys could even make that play? Like, not only, you know, time and stakes or whatever, but just starting at the free throw line and blocking a 7-footer. Like, we came up with Bam, maybe, Anthony Davis, maybe, Mitchell Robinson, maybe. Like, I don't think Embiid has the foot speed to do it. Matisse doesn't have the height to do it.
I don't think Gobert is fast enough either.
Yeah. It was just such an incredible play, and he deserves all of the flowers for it, because, my God, man. Like,
Brandon Clark.
Okay. There you go. No, I don't think so. Jared Jackson?
Jared Jackson maybe. Closer.
Right team.
Yeah, there you go. As long as you didn't choose Kyle Anderson, you're fine. All right, so let's move into Game 5 now and really the rest of the series. And Ty, I want to ask you about some potential Bucks adjustments, even though, you know, again, they're going back to Phoenix, probably feeling pretty good about where this series is. I know you said you don't want to talk about Brook Lopez minutes, so I'm sorry that I have to ask the question, but, you know, his minutes have dwindled throughout this series. We're seeing more time with Giannis playing the five, including that possession. What do you think the Bucks need to do, you know, with their front court rotation? I guess I'll make it a little easier for you.
Yeah, it's honestly a fascinating thing right now. On the last pod, Adam on our show, he hypothesized Brook Lopez's minutes right now. It's strictly tied to how his three ball is falling. Because I do think the front court rotation is no longer about Brook Lopez versus Portis. It's about what's best for, like, Chris and Giannis. And you saw at the end of game 4, all of their offense was clear out one side, Chris Giannis pick and roll with space. And I think at this point, the Bucks are pretty comfortable defensively, even if Lopez isn't out there. And maybe more so without him out there, which had never been the case all postseason. And honestly, I was shocked because this is a guy who wasn't played off the court against the Nets, even with the injuries, like, 3.5 games of Kyrie, 3.5 games or so of banged up Harden, still had KD the whole time. I figured it was going to get tight for Lopez. It didn't. He was phenomenal in that series. But obviously Phoenix is a lot more pick and roll centric than the Nets are. And I think even then Atlanta, Brook was excellent against Atlanta too. But I think it's more about offense, but also defensively, they seem like they're doing much better switching against the Suns. And I know coming into the series, I think Nekias Duncan maybe had pointed this out in his one of his excellent previews. The Suns were not good attacking switches, like all postseason. That defense worked better than most against them. I mean, it makes sense, right? If they rely on pick and rolls and you have the personnel to switch, it makes it a lot harder to get advantages out of the pick and rolls. So, but I think offensively it's even more important. I think the Bucks offense has just been such a slog, and they just are dying for spacing, especially now that Phoenix is clumping up around the paint more. So it's so funny to me because I was high on Portis when they signed him, but all of a sudden the Bucks championship hopes might ride on Portis being playable for 25 minutes on defense and or hitting shots. He's not shot well. He was hesitant to shoot in game 4. I think the Bucks are going to be showing him every three he passed up and, like, legit screaming at him, like, you need to shoot these. Like, it's very important that you shoot these with how good of a shooter you are now. If Portis goes out there and has a Crowder game where he's, like, 6 of 7 in Phoenix, could absolutely swing the series because I think they're going to try to keep playing him. I think defensively there's some holes when he plays, and Lopez is better. But the matchup is better for Portis. So if they're even on that end and Portis is finally going to hit threes, I think there's going to be minutes for him. Let's see how he shoots. Let's see how he does. It's going to be fascinating. But I do think going small, going more switchable, it's just worked against Phoenix. And this is something that we took the L on. We thought Brook had to play more, everything else. The evidence over the last few, especially game 4, was like, you know, believe it or not, and no one does. Bud has been pulling the right levers and putting them in the right situations to win. And I think this is another example of something that seems crazy. It's been working, and I think it's good for their offense. I think it's been fine on defense. You know, one great Bobby Portis game might be all they need, which is so funny to think about. But here we are. I mean, they've gotten this far off. You know, like I said, just finding ways to win that are not pretty. this feels like the next version of that, as much as people online are going to be like, how is this possible?
Well, there's another component to this that we seem to be forgetting, which is Bobby, I would argue, is the second best rebounder in the entire team. So it's not like he's a full-on negative. So people focus on, you know, the lack of foot speed, the lack of defensive acumen, but he will defensive rebound, he will offensive rebound, and I don't care about this whole narrative that, oh, offensive rebounding in today's NBA is dead and buried. No, in the NBA finals, you have to scrap.
Anyone saying that has not watched the Bucks much, because they've run on the margins with second chance points many, many times this run.
Exactly. And you need a guy like him who can spread the court, who can come in and have those explosions, even if it's just for a quarter where he goes off for like seven quick ones, that can swing a game. And I like, we have had this conversation on this podcast, Brian and I, so much in regards to Bobby versus PJ, because I'm of the opinion that sometimes PJ gets overplayed just like, because that whole narrative of defense is for some reason just very prevalent, where I would argue, put Portis in there, he can give you that swing skill of the shooting, the rebounding that you just might need. So I'm very much looking forward to extended Bobby minutes, because I want to be proven right on this one.
I'm looking forward to extended Bobby minutes so he prices his way out of Milwaukee this summer, because I don't want to see him back
here. The endorsements are coming through for him. He just got a VP. He's working on Haynes on Twitter.
Oh, no.
He's going to make enough secondary income that he can stay until they can pay him in 2 years, Brian. This is the new move.
That's the end around. I like it. Yeah, you're talking about winning in the margin and, like, you know, they just need one Bobby Portis game. Well, that's where we are in this series with it, best of three. So it's like, you just need this one outlier game, and you don't have to bank on it happening every time. But if you get the one outlier, you're now one game away from winning the title. Like, this is how playoff series go, how championship runs go. There's always like a X player game, like Mikal Bridges game in game two, where you just don't see someone exploding, and then you still get the contributions that you expect from your stars. But, you know, it's that, who is that X factor? Like, maybe PJ Tucker starts hitting shots. I don't think it's going to happen, but, you know, maybe he hits
maybe
a couple
Jeff
threes.
Teague. Oh, no, wait.
Game six, Jeff Teague was huge. There was one Jeff Teague game. I think we're going to see his minutes keep going down. And I don't think we see Forbes again. Like, game seven against Brooklyn, six guys played. I don't know if we get there this series. It depends on Bobby. You know Pat's going to play. Honestly, I do wonder if they ever look at changing the starters. I don't think they will. I do wonder about it. I think it is loosely on the table. I don't think for game five, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. I don't think they'll do that, though. I think Brook has earned at least shots to play in these games and just see how it's going. I mean, they did win his minutes, I think, in game three pretty handily. So, and their starting five has been good most of the time. They weren't that good in game four. But Pat's going to play. Pat Connaughton, I mean, a semi-serious take about his jersey being retired has come from me. Some people get really upset about it. I'm of the opinion, like the Blazers did this when they won, if you want to retire like eight numbers and you barely ever win one, that's fine, dude. Like, enjoy it. Enjoy it. But in all seriousness on Pat, not the silly stuff, he's been so good. Like, not every game, you don't expect that from a role player, like you guys were just saying. And on that role player game, the fact that the Suns lost the Jay Crowder game made me feel really good. Like, 6 for 7 from deep, 5 for 5 in the second half, freaking step backs around guys. I was like, oh man, like, if the Bucks hold on, that's phenomenal, because Jay Crowder games are, as the Bucks know, tough. But Pat has just been, like, not a great defender, but he holds up. Stays in front of guys mostly, has been better about fouling, has hit some really big shots, offensive rebounds, like getting to the cup. He's had some bad turnovers. He's certainly not been perfect, but just like, so it's just cool to see like the guys like that who are end up being important in a finals run. Like, I'm going to freak out and tear up if Chris and Giannis win a title together, but it's just cool also to see like a Pat Connaughton who was by Bucks fans made fun of, you know, go play for the Orioles, everything else. And now he's the sixth man on a potential title team, and he's done well. And it's just like, it's awesome to see a guy work on his game that much and turn himself from a guy who should not play to they're needing him to win a title.
Yeah, I mean, he's been their most reliable three-point shooter throughout the playoffs, yes. And that's, you know, kind of a testament to how poorly the rest of the team has shot.
Every year.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's especially with Dante DiVincenzo out, and we've been harping on this really throughout the playoffs, like, that is a sneaky big loss for the Bucks, and their rotations would make a lot more sense if you had one more guy like DiVincenzo, especially. Oh, yeah. Like, I don't think we would be seeing as many Jeff Teague minutes in particular.
No. I think Forbes would have been relegated to the bench a lot quicker, too, when he just stopped hitting anything. Funny, he's still first among rotation players in three-point percentage, but almost all of that comes in the first round, as we know. But, yeah, DiVincenzo, really the thing is, like, just having guards, who like, two-way guards. Like, they needed a better bench guard anyway. Like, they certainly – that was a flaw. But it looks so much worse with Dante out. But, again, that's the playoffs, right? And I think that's just the kind of things teams have to overcome. And for the Bucks, I mean, Mort, I agree, PJ's offense has been so inconsistent. But the fact that he's been able to step in, play heavy minutes, and guard down, that's the biggest thing for the Bucks is, like, who can guard down? Who can guard smaller than them? Chris has done it well, and PJ has done it well. It's been essential. Like, if he was only able to guard fours at this point in his career, it would be understandable. But, like, how the hell do you handle Booker? Like, Chris would have to do so much on that end. So it's been huge that he's been able to do that and basically be guard everyone from Booker to Kevin Durant in the same playoff run to John Collins to Capella. Like, credit to him for that shiftiness. The Bucks have certainly needed it beyond, like, so badly this playoff run.
Oh, they have. I mean, I'm not trying to downplay him as a player, but I do think there have been numerous games where we've seen the Bucks just go through these muddy spells offensively where Bud has just insisted on keeping PJ in there, where you just kind of go, just try Bobby for a few minutes. If he's not hitting, if he's not scoring, then go back to PJ. It's fine. Just try to get someone in there who might score more than 4 points in a total game. Just diversify, you know? Yeah. It was more along those lines.
No, for sure.
And part of the problem is the Bucks will make the right play and they'll swing pass around the perimeter and, like, Phoenix is rightfully leaving PJ open, so
yeah,
they're making the correct basketball play and swinging it open to an open PJ, but he's very unlikely to hit those shots, and I almost want them to be more selfish. If they, like, whoever's catching the ball and sees PJ in the corner, be like, actually, I'm just going to go attack the rim right now. Like, I'm going to force something else to happen.
Well, it's funny. We've talked about, you know, a big Portis game or PJ. I wouldn't shock me if PJ did have, like, a 3-threes performance. And that sounds so minor, but it would be so huge for the Bucks if he had a 3-for-5 game on all corner threes. But, like, there are also two more great Chris Middleton games away, I think. Because I think we know Giannis's baseline. Like, his bad games are 28, 15, 5, and amazing defense. I mean, two more 40 burgers or even close to it from Chris. And suddenly that the Bucks team is so much better when he's on. I think they haven't lost this playoffs when he scored 30. Just because, I mean, we talked about this during the Nets series, I think. It was like, oh, Giannis and Chris are the first teammates to score X since. And my take was like, Giannis is just always waiting on anyone else. Like, Giannis is always half of that. Every single game, he's providing, like, the, oh, we're halfway to 75, whoever wants to come with me, and there's just not always someone there. And when someone is there, suddenly they don't look like these teams, like, literally, but it's like, you know, the Kyrie LeBron stuff in 16 of, like, it's really hard to beat a team when two guys are 30-plus, right? And, like, really efficient, strong defense. That's, I mean, you don't want to put too much pressure on him. It doesn't matter. I don't think he's going to listen. Sorry, guys. I don't think Chris is tuning in. But, you know, Chris goes out and has 35-plus in the next two games. Feels like it's going to be really not easy, but if that's the game plan for the Bucks now, I think, is, like, you tried to get everyone else involved. It was great. Run a bunch of Chris Giannis pick and roll. Get those guys going. Let your two best players, two guys who have been here since 2013, try to carry you to a championship together. I can live with the results, I think, either way, if that's what they do. I mean, that you can't ask for much more than that if you're a Bucks fan, and Chris and Giannis are in a position to get you there. It's really cool, and they might be able to do it, which is awesome.
Right. Yeah. And we also have to have a conversation about if that's the game plan for those two, just let Drew know, you know, if you're going to take, like, 11 first quarter shots, at least make 5.
Just take layups, Drew. Just take layups. I'm sick of all the jumpers. They worked out in game three, but it's like you're not gonna be consistent. Which is funny because he was in the regular season. It yeah. hasn't translated. Maybe it's the increased effort on the other end in the playoffs. I don't know, but just get to the cup and make layups. Like, he's missed so many bunnies in this series, and then he starts passing out of them and throwing really bad passes from, like, right at the rim, like the old Rondo jokes. And it's like, you got to keep trying to make layups, dude, but you don't have to keep trying these 16-foot contested jumpers with 18 on the shot clock. Like, that's a Chris shot, not a you shot. I'm sorry, Drew. Love you, Drew. That's the Chris shot. That's nobody else on the team should be taking that.
And he's taken only 6 shots less over the series than Giannis.
Yeah, I mean, Giannis's abundance of free throws does.
That's true. He's had
certainly a lot more shot opportunities, but yeah, it does. He shot a ton, and that's the thing. I think Jason Maples made this point on Twitter. Like, it's fine if you want to say he's going to be less effective on offense. Maybe don't take 20 shots and make 4 of them, right? Like, you have to draw that line as a player. Like, all right, maybe I don't have it. I'll step back a little bit and enable these guys to score more.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm glad we had Chris Middleton appreciation because we've been caping for that guy for years, and it's been nice to see him, you know, on this stage, because really throughout the playoffs, he's had some inconsistent performances. The start of the Brooklyn series.
This series.
Start of the Atlanta series, and then, yeah, games 2 and 3 in this series as well. And it, going back to, like, the Chris Paul narrative, I feel like every time Chris Middleton has a bad game, there are people who pile on it, like, $180 million for what? And then the next game, he drops 40 in the finals. And it's like, for that. Like, this is Warren and I were talking about this. He's, like, somewhat overextended in his role because he's being forced to be their best shot creator. And ideally, he wouldn't be in that role, like, to fully maximize Chris Middleton. It'd be great to pair him next to a Damian Lillard or something like that. But the fact that he's still able to be effective, even at times, you know, he's going to have some bad games, but, like, 40 points in the finals, man, it's hard to complain about that.
Yeah. Well, did you see the LeBron stat with him?
No.
He's 1 tie or go-ahead shot in crunch time, however they define it, from having the most of those in the last 25 years. I think he's tied with LeBron right now with however many it is. But, yeah, I mean, just to – and it's funny because the Batman Robin take was stupid. And now I think Zach Lowe bullied Perk into saying Batman and Superman. That one I can live with. And Buck's Twitter, I think, was on that too. But there is a kernel of truth in it, in that, like, in those situations – you do want the ball in Chris's hands first.
Yep.
He can get it to Giannis a lot of the time, but that's just it's just skill sets. Like, it should not be seen as a negative for Giannis. Chris is better at that. Like, Chris can make the shot with someone in his face. I mean, the first game of the playoffs, he hits a game winner in OT over Duncan Robinson. Like, he's done that kind of stuff for years. He is inconsistent. It does hurt. I think game 2, they could be up 3-1 right now if he showed up like this in game 2. He didn't. Oh, well. It's in the past now. They still have a chance to win the series. He could still get them there. But he has the ability to hit those kind of shots. We've just seen it over and over. And, you know, game 4, 10 straight points to close it out. Like, the block is great, but if they don't score on offense, they could still lose that game with the way Booker was playing. He's been huge. He's been exactly good enough for them to get this far. And if he's exactly good enough for them to win a title, then it's, like you said, what can you complain about? Like, okay, the ride wasn't great. Doesn't matter anymore. If you get there, you get there. That's what matters.
Yeah, I think halfway through the second round, I tweeted something along the lines of, like, Tobias Harris is being what the Bucks need Chris Middleton to be, and then Tobias Harris promptly turned into an egg, and now Chris Middleton is in the finals. So, I mean, might need to go back and delete that tweet. Let's go to the Suns side now. Hopefully Monty Williams is not listening to this for any intel or his assistant coaches. But, Ty, what do you think the Suns need to do now? Because, you know, there was a clip coming out of Monty after the game in the locker room, you know, trying to just pick his guys up and saying, like, look, this is going to be hard, but we have home court advantage still. Like, it sucks that we lost 2, but, you know, the series with the old adage, no one's stolen a road game yet. Like, you know, we still got the 2 of the last 3 at home. So what does Phoenix need to do to get momentum back on its side?
Well, it's funny because I thought outside of Monty's bizarre refusal to play the starters more, and it's funny because everyone coming in was like, oh, it's going to be, I think, like, but it was up to, like, those coaches could have been flip-flopped, I think, at one point in the hiring process or whatever. Maybe the Suns could have hired. Maybe Bud said no to the Suns. Was that it? I don't remember. But, like, I think they've been roughly equal. Maybe Bud has even been better, honestly. Like, and the most glaring example was Ayton in game three of just, like, oh, can't play him. He's in foul trouble.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's on the bench until the Suns are down 20. It's like, what was the point? What were you saving him for? Like, it's a fallacy. If he fouls out, he fouls out. You get to the same result of not playing him when it matters. But, like, I can't believe after that game, too, the minutes Bridges plays compared to, like, campaign and Kaminsky play. Kaminsky, I think, is done now. But Kaminsky playing, like, he goes just about as deep as Bud. So I think that's been interesting. But, like, play the best guys more. Even Booker, who, I mean, if he knew not then what he knows now and that he literally can't foul out, he would have played him more. But right. Even Booker probably should have played more in game four. But I think defensively, though, I think they had the right approach. Like, build the barrier, as we call it, because we're scarred by the W word. Build the barrier. Don't let Giannis get those easy looks. You have to match Ayton's minutes with Giannis as much as you can. And again, we're at this point in the season, foul trouble be damned. Like, you need him out there. Giannis' true shooting with Ayton out there, I looked it up. It's like, it's lower, significantly lower than when he's not out there. It's Steph Curry's career true shooting percentage in the playoffs, I think, or regular season or something. Like, he's still that good and that efficient. Like, it's 62.6, I think. And that's either Steph's in playoffs or regular season. I don't remember. But either way, it's like, oh, you're holding him to Steph Curry career numbers. But when Ayton's off, it's like 76. It's like, oh, my God, he's just doing everything. So you have to play Ayton as much of Giannis's minutes as you can. You have to keep crunching up the paint. You have to make the Bucks hit threes. I mean, they haven't been able to for most of the playoffs. And you can get burned, and you might have to adjust. Like, if the shooting breakthrough finally happens for the Bucks, you can very easily get blown out that way. I mean, this is the same roster, minus Dante and Forbes, who just can't play anymore, that set a record for made threes against Miami early in the year against the same defense with Giannis just going, I'll just make every pass. And Giannis will try to make every pass early. We'll see the shift if the shots don't fall. But I think that's the best approach, honestly, is like, we're going to make the other guys hit. We're going to make P.J. Tucker. We're going to make Jrue Holiday, like Pat, Brooke Lopez, Portis, make those guys hit shots. I don't think you can keep, like, single coverage on Giannis, just not an option anymore, the way the Bucks play. They get him rolling. They get him posted up on a mismatch. It's 2 points and or a foul. Like, you just can't afford to let him foul out the whole team while putting up 40 and getting every offensive board. So I think they're going to have to stick with that and just hope the role players don't make him pay at home or on the road for the Bucks. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to some extent, like, I think Phoenix's best strategy is just don't panic. Like, don't think you have to go back to square one and, like, tear up everything you've been doing. Because if Devin Booker doesn't get into foul trouble in that game, it's very conceivable that they're going up, you know, they go up 3-1 in this series. Like, as you said, he probably had 7 fouls, and 2 of which didn't get called. You know, like, he definitely should have fouled out with 3 minutes left, so they got very lucky there. And then also a few minutes left, or like 1 minute left of the game, that was his 7th foul. So keeping guys out of foul trouble in general between 8 and game 3, Booker in game 4, those were both really crucial. Not losses, because neither guy actually fouled out, but, you know, you had to keep Booker on the bench a little longer than you probably would have preferred in the fourth quarter. Like, they go up 9 early in the fourth, and it's like, uh-oh. You know, that was uh-oh time for the Bucks, but the Bucks, I think Connaughton hits a 3 right on the other end, cuts it to 6, and they keep it within striking distance. Had you been able to bring Booker back a little bit earlier, maybe he can, you know, prevent that late-game salvo from Chris Middleton. So, you know, I like just telling guys to stay smart and keep their, like, Booker's 5th foul where he just, like, kind of checks P.J. Tucker out of bounds, that you just cannot afford dumb fouls like that. Like, off-ball fouls are absolute no-nos in this series, and you have to react. I mean, you won't know how the game is being called until it starts, but you have to react accordingly. If it's a tight whistle, you just have to play more cautiously. You can't afford getting into foul trouble because, as you said, Monty does seem to be holding to the adage of we can't play, like, this guy's picked up three fouls, we can't play him in the rest of the half, first half, or
yeah,
he's got five fouls, I'm not going to risk him fouling out, even though he can hug a guy and still not get
it. Well, yeah, and I think that people have said the Booker foul on PJ shouldn't have been called in that situation. My approach to those is always the same. If it's the Bucks or another team, you can't put yourself in that position. Like, that's like when Giannis will pick up fouls. Some of the fouls on Giannis are terrible offensively, but when he extends the arm, like, that's going to be called if the guy flops. He just has to know that, especially if it's someone smaller than him. Like, Booker just can't put himself in that situation with four personals of, like, you know, trying to get a rebounding position. I know PJ, the one thing he has done on offense is abused Paul and Booker for offensive boards. But you made it so blatant, and like it was like a football move. You just can't put yourself in that position as a player. You have to be more cognizant. And then he doubles down by the trying to take foul Drew, who cannot make layups at all. Like, an all-time bad decision that somehow didn't cost him. But that shows, like, Booker's got to be smarter with fouls in this series. And just, like, you have to be cognizant, especially on that night. I am the offense. Like, I am our chance of winning. I need to be smart and keep myself in this game.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, talk about, like, don't put yourself in that position. It goes back to the Nugget series where Jokic gets the flagrant two. And it's like, what, should he have been called a flagrant two? Should he be ejected? I don't know. But it was just such a dumb play that you can't leave that to someone else's discretion. And it's very similar. Ayton defensively, Booker offensively, they are so important to what the Suns are doing. Those two guys, like, if Mikal Bridges fouls out, not the end of the world. If Ayton or Booker fouls out, you know, I would be very surprised if Phoenix wins this game. Mort, I want to go back to CP because he has struggled the last couple of games with Drew just smothering him. How do you think the Suns can get him going, or should they just keep running their offense through Devin Booker until Drew switches on him? Should he just play, like, keep away from whichever guard Drew isn't defending at the time?
No, I think you need to make Chris Paul involved. He's arguably your first or second best player, depending on how you value Booker any given night. You need to get him involved in some capacity. So this is up to Monty Williams to make sure that maybe the right screens are set for him. Maybe you insert some plays where you move him a little bit off ball and get him shooting. He just needs to have some level of success stories, whether that's seeing the ball go through the basket, whether that's him making an assist, whether that defensively, for crying out loud, having a couple of successful stops. You just need to get him going. Chris Paul will figure stuff out. I like Drew Holiday as much as the next guy, but at no point am I sitting here going, oh, Drew is going to lock up one of the greatest point guards of all time, consistently so, and completely nullify his game. Chris Paul is going to find out ways and methods to get himself more involved, but I do think that the entire Suns coaching staff need to maybe amp up that effort a little bit more. Get him some help, be a little bit more creative, and then I kind of want to see Chris get to the free throw line more. And that actually goes with the entire Suns team if we're looking at avenues and how they can improve. Right now, the entire score in this series only has a point differential of 3 points. So the Bucks have scored 442 points, the Suns 439. The Suns are one of the best free throw shooting teams in the NBA, plus 85% here in these finals. Getting to the line more, converting at a higher rate, that could make the difference. And I realize it sounds like I'm just splitting hairs here, but that matters. Like, the small margin things, they matter. For Chris specifically, who is one of the great free throw shooters, for Booker as well, just get to the foul line, force contact, get to the basket aggressively. I think that has to be the key for virtually everyone. And Ayton as well. Like, I don't want to see DeAndre Ayton take that little 15-foot midi until after he's dunked on at least two Bucks players.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I'm glad you said get to the rim to get those free throws, because that blissfully for the Bucks and general basketball viewership, the officials this series have said, hey, we're not going to give you the fouls every jump shot if you kick your foot out. Like, you're not going to get and ones and two. Like, we're just not doing that. you have to, like, it has to be real contact, I think. Game one was a little bit like that, but since, it feels like that's really gone away, which obviously good for the Bucks the way they score, but I think that's how it should be. Like, I think you should have to earn contact. And the free throw difference in the series is what it is, because Giannis gets to the rim and gets hacked all the time. Yeah. Chris, before game four, had shot, what, like three free throws in the series? And he had taken some real contact. He should have had more on drives, but they're not giving jump shooters that many foul shots. Booker's getting some, but he's also going to the basket more. Mm. But I do think, like, the Bucks thing is the paint on both ends. Yep. And that's been, that's, this is like kind of their approach to winning. And it's a little bit less so with Les Lopez, but it's like, if you can beat us without getting to the paint, you can beat us. We don't think you can four times in seven games. And that's always been their approach. The difference is now, finally, there's less rigidness in how are we stopping you from getting to the paint. But clearly, this has been Bud's idea all along with a Giannis team, is like, we can use this guy to take away the paint to a large degree. If we don't let teams get to the paint, and if we can do it smarter than, you know, the classic drop that stopped working after a while, we can probably win on the margins. Like, that's, it's just really hard in basketball to outscore a team 4-7 if you can't get to the rim. Like, there's something psychological, I think, with most jump shooters. If you never, like, if the shot is off, you just have to get to the rim and see some fall. I think this was the Rockets' downfall. They didn't get to the rim enough in the playoffs. And the Bucks' whole thing is like, hey, good luck. If you get four great shooting games, fine, you'll beat us. We're going to try really hard. We're going to upgrade our perimeter defense and everything else, but we're not going to let you win the paint. We're going to win there. We think that's a good bet for us. This postseason, it's paid off more often than not. It will be fascinating. I agree, Mort. I think Zach Lowe made the same point. They have, the Suns have been terrible at getting to the paint. Like, no points coming from there. They have to find ways to do that. I think Ayton is the obvious answer. That's a lot of pressure for a young player in his first playoff run and first finals to, hey, can you be our paint scoring? The Bucks, they think they know that. I think they're going to focus on, hey, if Booker's going to beat Pat Connaughton pulling up from 18 feet a bunch, fine, fine. Nothing we can do. We're not going to let you get to the paint over and over. And I can live with that bet, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, Mikal Bridges might be a low-key way to do so as well. I know he's, you know, he's been beaten up physically a bit throughout the playoffs and into the series, but we did see some of that in game two where he's able to create off the dribble and get to the rim a little bit. And he drew 8 free throw attempts in that game. So, you know, if CP, especially if he's having another, you know, off par or like substandard game by his incredible Hall of Fame career standards, then, you know, Booker is going to do what he does best. But I could see Bridges being one of those X factors as well. Like, can we get 2 Mikal Bridges games in the same series? I guess we'll find out soon. So want to go with updated predictions here, and then we'll get to Team USA briefly. So Ty, I know before the playoffs started you had the tweet, and we are 2 games away from it coming true, right?
No, I'm one off because the freaking Heat are too bad.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I had Bucks in 5, Bucks in 7, Bucks in 6. Bucks in 6 was the tweet. They win the first one in 4 because the Bucks have the worst shooting game ever and Miami can't capitalize. So if they had won that game and then the Bucks end up closing out in Milwaukee instead of in Miami, then it would be right. But still, if they win this one in 6, I'll still feel really good about the tweet. I am sticking with Bucks in 6. I after they lost game 2, I was like, I think it has to be in 7 now. I do feel like with the way Giannis is playing, game 4 aside, you know, you steal the one in Phoenix. That's what you have to do. You have to win one in Phoenix either way. You make it game 5, it's obviously eminently possible to still win in 6.
Yeah. Mort, how about you?
I mean, I've been all over the place. As you know, before this series, I told you I was going to be flip-flopping. I said before the start of the series that a healthy Giannis, I would have Bucks in 6. If Giannis wasn't healthy, I would have the Suns in 6. I think we've seen a healthy Giannis, although there were some weirdness there early on in Game 4 where he looked fatigued, and Game 1 he was also a little bit wobbly, but outside of that, he's been primarily healthy. And then last time we recorded, Brian, we were like, the Suns are not going to lose 4 out of the next 5. Remember we said that?
Yeah,
and
we sure did.
And it was like, we were absolutely certain. And then the Bucks just squeezed out game 4 in a manner that I did not expect. So now I just don't know. So I'm changing my whole thing. I'm just saying I hope we have a game seven because I love these finals. It's been fantastic. Yeah. That's what I'm going with. Sorry, Ty. That's
fine.
I'm a Euro, so I there's a part of me that wants Giannis to win this thing. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. But I just want a game seven. Then let's take Giannis in game seven, just because that's the Euro bias chiming in then. Bucks and seven.
There we go.
Bucks and seven.
Yeah, I mean, I had Suns and six going into this series, and after game two, I was feeling pretty good about that. So it was Vegas. I think they were like a minus almost 500 favorite at that point. Now it's basically up for grabs again. They're a minus 145 for the Suns, which I'm assuming is just because they have home court. Bucks are a plus 125 at the FanDuel Sportsbook. Man, my brain is saying Suns still because I know they weren't that far away from winning game four. But my heart is saying Bucks in six now because it's just hard for me to see, given the body language in that Suns locker room after game four, like Monty having to give that speech concerns me. That makes me think that they, like, the Bucks, the way they have dominated, especially in game three, but also just dominated the paint really throughout this series, seems to have shaken the Suns to an extent that we haven't seen in the playoffs.
Yes.
So like how they respond to this adversity. I mean, the Bucks have faced a lot more adversity in the playoffs, especially in that Brooklyn series, and even, you know, seeing Giannis go down against Atlanta, than the Suns have. And I'm really curious to see how the Suns respond in game five. Thankfully for their sake, it's at home. If they were going into game five on the road, I would definitely take Bucks at six. But yeah, I'm with you. I just hope we get a game seven. Sorry to Ty, Bucks fans, Suns fans, because I know that would be...
If they win in seven, I don't care. Trust me. I'm fine with it. That's okay. Fair.
I
care
just,
about that more than my tweet.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine how excruciating that game seven will be unless it's just a complete blowout. But from, you know, I think the other 28 fan bases are rooting for a game seven because this finals has been great. And if, like... I mean, we've said it every time now, but if you are not watching because the quote-unquote best teams aren't in it, you are missing out on one of the most entertaining finals we've had in recent years.
Yeah. Well, I think like 12 million people tuned in legally to Game 4, so I think not many people are actually doing that. Probably more people tweeting it than actually doing it. But I just quickly, I know we want to talk FIBA, or Olympics, sorry. I love that you touched on like the adversity because I've been talking about this too, and it's one of those things I always worry, like, is this a dumb narrative or is this real? I do think it's kind of real. I don't think it has for sure decided the series. The Suns might answer awesome. We just have to see. But that was something coming in, like the Bucks, kind of like Giannis in that monologue, like they've been the lowest of lows as far as a team that gets to the finals can basically do. I mean, round one you sweep, but like, it was a creaky win in game one, and it was like, oh, is this the same old demons? Is this going to be tough again? And then from there, they obviously, you know, dominate. Round two, that game two loss, and even the game three win, were so, like, we had pods talking about how are they going to retool around Giannis? Can Giannis be the best? Like, it was bad. It was so bad. And then they lose game five the way they do, and it's like, oh, my God. Like, it's so over. The resiliency. I mean, you talked about the Atlanta series. Giannis goes out, a game they weren't playing well anyway. Suddenly it's 2-2. Hawks fans are cheering Hawks in six. Brooke Lopez, Bobby Portis, Drew, and Chris carry them to two straight wins to start the finals. Like, they've been through this all before. So I knew when they went down 0-2, I was like, it doesn't matter yet. If they lose game three, then it's a different convo. But they've seen way more adversity than this. I do. It's fascinating now to see the Suns be, and they're not down in the series, but the tightest moment for them in this playoff run by far. I think they were down 2-1 to the Lakers at one point, but obviously the Lakers team without Anthony Davis, so it was slightly different. And it's the first round. This is like suddenly it's gut check time for a team that swept and then won the conference finals in six, never trailed, obviously in Denver series, never trailed, I don't think, in the conference finals. Now it's like, okay. Here we are. This is now a high-intensity game at home. It's going to be fascinating. I like the Bucks' chances just because they've been through this before this run. The Suns team is so young, so good, but so young. This is a new look for them.
Yeah. So let's go briefly into Team USA.
Well, I'm going to have to stop you, Brian, because we have some developments.
Oh.
Henry Abbott has reported that in the coming days, Damian Lillard will request a trade.
What?
What?
Yes, sir.
Really?
Yes, he has.
Huh.
I think that's a little bit more important right now, and then we can transition into the FIBA stuff, but yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right, so Ben Simmons is going to the Sixers.
Ben Simmons is going to the Sixers? Did you just say that?
Oh, no.
Because you know what? That would piss off every Sixers.
That's true. Wow. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now, a source close to Lillard says that in the days to come, he plans to request a trade. Wow. Mm-hmm. So, don't have a terrible offseason in which you turn into the laughingstock of the NBA, I guess, if you have a franchise caliber player. Damn.
Yep. That also probably means the end of Neil Olshey.
Yeah.
You would hope, man.
Yes.
He should have been gone anyway, but you would hope this would.
Well,
wow, so
I saw Hyken yesterday said he had heard, based on like this, you know, the whole investigation, there's the people who did the investigation into who did the investigation of Chauncey, and it turns out he had some...
Nobody.
Yeah, some basically. Not great ties. So yeah, Hyken was saying like it sounded more like Olshey was in danger now than he was 48 hours ago, but then Jason Quick, I believe he's at The Athletic now, said that he had heard the opposite. So it sounds like that is still up in the air, but yeah, I would assume a Damian Lillard trade request might push the not great for Neil Olshey's job status.
Oh yeah. Well, so on that bombshell, let's go to FIBA.
All right. Well, because Damian Lillard is on the team as well.
Perfect segue.
Yeah.
But Bradley Beal no longer is, unfortunately, because he was placed in the health and safety protocol Wednesday and was ruled out of the Olympics on Thursday. Jeremy Grant was also placed into the protocol. This is from Brian Windhorst of ESPN. They said, out of caution, although head coach Greg Popovich expressed optimism that he will be able to remain with the team. So, Beal's out. Jeremy Grant is a maybe, but it sounds like he's going to stay. Meanwhile, they lost their first two scrimmages, one against Nigeria and then against Australia on Monday. They bounced back and beat Argentina the next night. But there was a lot of, when they were down 0-2 in their scrimmages, there's a lot of, you know, consternation about, like, what's wrong with Team USA here? So, Ty, have you had time to follow along with the finals going on, all of this Team USA stuff? And, you know, what do you think were some of the root causes of their struggles early on?
It's pretty clear they can't win without their Bucks guys, I think. very obvious that Jrue Holiday and Chris Middleton are integral to Team USA. I hate, by the way, that those guys are still expected to play. Like, after all this, they're going to hop on a plane, like, from the parade. Like, just find other guys, man. Like, I think it's ridiculous that guys still playing are going to end up in the Olympics. Like, it just seems like way too much. But all jokes aside, and obviously Jrue hasn't had a terrific two-way run, I do think they need more steady point guard play, and I think they need more getting to the basket as well. I feel like their team is a lot of jump shooters. Like, when it was it like the starting five, Beal wasn't starting, was he? Or was he?
I believe he was.
So it was like Dame, Beal, Tatum, KD, like,
Bam,
it's just so much, and Bam. Yeah, like, they don't have enough guys going north-south. Like, I think it would help them a lot if they had someone who was getting to the basket, driving and kicking, and playing more defense, quite honestly. They have good defenders, but they don't have that many good guard defenders on the team. And also, like, the foul baiting, unsuccessful foul baiting, has just been brutal to watch.
Like, yeah, yeah.
They're, like, doing all these horrible things, and the FIBA officials are just staring at them like, that's no way, dude. Like, that's been ugly. Like, it's a horrible look for the country for them to be losing like this. And I understand the talent gap is closing. I'm not disputing that. But the U.S. still has abundantly more talent. And even without some, even without the Stephs and LeBrons, like, your team has KD, Tatum, Beal, Dame. Like, I'm sorry. And you don't have as much cohesion. That's the trade the U.S. makes. They're the, they have all the talent, top to bottom, top shelf NBA players. You can trade some cohesion for that. You should still win. We've seen that in years past. I don't think Pop is a great international coach. I mean, people mostly ignored the 2019 FIBA. He was not very good there. I mean, Harrison Barnes at the five getting destroyed by Gobert in a really crucial game for them. I think that's been an issue, but I don't love the way the roster's built. They need more point guards. They need more than just Drew anyway, like true point guards. But there's a lot of issues right now, I feel like, with the team. And I know they're projecting that they're not worried and everything else, and that's good. Then I need to see him get to the rim more and stop trying to draw these fouls, because it's just like, it's such a bad look, man. Yeah. It looks terrible.
Yeah. Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports reported that, you know, that a couple of times in particular, and I know there are clips going around on Twitter too of like they're trying
consternation.
Yeah, like Trey Young dive into guys and the refs are clearly not calling them. As they adjust to international style and more importantly international referees, I think that will change over time. And I think, you know, as they have more time together, develop chemistry and develop like a pecking order, that should help as well, because as you said, I mean, right now, all of the guys really in the starting lineup, other than Bam, their top skill is scoring. Even Dame, I mean, he's a good playmaker as well, but like you associate him with his shooting, his scoring more than his playmaking. Yeah.
So he's certainly been playing that way over there. I mean, I watched some of the Argentina game, and it's like, he goes around a screen 30 feet from the rim and is just pulling up bombs from all over.
right. So, yeah, adding Drew and Chris, I mean, I know you were half joking here, but adding guys who will do some of that dirty work, I think will, you know, give this team a nice lift. And adding Devin Booker, who, again, he's like another guy whose primary skill set is scoring, but he is at least a three-level scorer. And, you know, he's actually better defensively now than he was a couple of years ago, or even than his reputation would suggest. Like, he's not a lockdown defender by any means, but he'll at least like throw his body in there and not let guys waltz to the rim. Mort, what is the perspective right now, like internationally, about Team USA? Are they as much of a laughing stock over there as they have been here?
Do you really want to know?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Yes.
Okay.
Look, here's the thing. There are, I'm part obviously of Danish NBA groups as well, and like there is a big European audience for NBA basketball, and that leads into international basketball as well. And clips of Jason Tatum and guys like looking around at the refs are being shared very aggressively with a lot of emojis. And we have this saying over here whenever there's like a crazy story that could be like just news wise, like Florida Man, for example. We have this saying in many European countries, those Americans, we just say, which is an insinuation of this is like the only place on earth that that story could originate. You know what I mean? And so we're basically taking that sentence and applying that now to the Team USA thing when they do those things. Like, that is only Americans that could just stop the course of play to look over at a ref, because we have this tendency over here at least where you can complain, but after the play, like get your ass back on defense, wait for the ball to stop or something, like wait for a call or something, then you can go talk to the ref. And the level of entitlement right now is significant. So we're laughing. Yeah, we are. fully recognizing that now's the time to laugh, because you're still going to kick everyone's ass.
We'll see. I hate the big man rotation they brought this year. I feel like big men are super important to the international game. They're really, really lucky that Jokic isn't pulling up for Serbia this year. I think that team, and I mean, not judging him, obviously, it's he's played so much ball in the last 12 months, but that team, I think, is really I mean, France and Spain always saw as well, but Like Bam is a really great player, not a traditional big though, not that big. And then it's like Draymond and Love being there. It's just like, what? Like, are we doing agent favor image rehabilitation as part of Team USA now? Like,
yeah, that
what
was weird.
Else is the point for him being there? And it's just like, I mean, I'm sorry, no excessive disrespect, but like, he hasn't been on the floor much for like 2 years. Like, I don't see the case. I think they needed a true big man. They don't really have one. That's a lot on Bam's shoulders, I think, against some of these great teams. Like, Gobert feasted on the team they sent last year because they didn't play Lopez or Turner enough. We'll see, I don't think they're for sure getting gold. I think probably at the end of the day, I mean, the team with KD and Dame and Beal, or not Beal anymore, Tatum, everyone else probably will. But I don't think it's a sure thing, and that is wild considering 12 and 16 the way those teams were.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think when you have Curry, if you have KD at least, that was the guy I was thinking about, with his size, him being able to pull up from everywhere on the floor, he is the biggest matchup nightmare you could ever have in FIBA-oriented tournaments. And then there's a guy no one really talks about, and I realize Brian's going to laugh because I'm going to bring up a bull. Zach LaVine is actually pretty, like, he's catered to this kind of league or this kind of tournament, because his athleticism is in the top 99th percentile of everyone involved. His shooting range is also very much like Dame, so substantial that he can create his shot every single time that he wants. But his first step is where he will get so much, he will gain so much, rather, because most international clubs or international teams simply just don't have the individual defense to stop someone of that caliber. So I'm looking for him to take over a lot of those Bradley Beal minutes, and they just have so much scoring upside that I think they're bound to win it. They just need to approach this from a mental perspective that's a little bit more humbling, and that's not because I believe that, oh, humble yourself, like, I don't care if you if you got it, flaunt it, that's really my mentality. But if you come in and like attack the refs and attack the whole system that has existed for far more than you have like lived on Earth, and you go, no, you should cater to my talent, that's when you go a bridge too far. So it becomes a question of going back a little bit, revisiting some of your inner demons there and going, all right, new approach. And that's where I think Pop is actually an asset. I understand where you're coming from, though, Ty. I mean, Ben Dowsett also mentioned it, that there are question marks hovering over Pop as an international coach. But I think from a maybe not X and O's perspective, but just from a mentality perspective as a leader, I think he'll definitely give them something.
Yeah.
And one final note on LaVine, by the way. I think this was actually something that brought me to that conclusion that he's also going to be a tremendous asset. I don't know if you guys saw this, but before the game started in Las Vegas, there was a video of him talking to, I think it was a FIBA expert or one of the assistant coaches who had been FIBA before, and he was like legitimately asking, so what's a travel in FIBA? Like, if I move my pivot foot here, before I put the ball down, like, he was really invested in trying to understand the differences, and I think that's the approach that Team USA just needs as a whole group. Like, you can't just go into this thing going, yeah, we'll just NBA it up, because that is where it goes wrong. Adapt, really. Adapt or die.
Also, one last very quick note on LaVine. Basically, the only one of their perimeter scorers who wasn't in the bubble, Beal, I guess, but he's now leaving, wasn't in the bubble. A lot less miles in the last 12 months than...
Yeah.
I can't believe KD's. I was stunned when KD signed up. Like, credit to him. He's obviously, I agree more, he is the X factor that makes me go, maybe they still do get gold, because in every important medal game, he just has a ton of points because no one can guard him, which is also true in the NBA. But the miles on him, it's so much credit to him for coming back. He wasn't in the bubble, but obviously, you know, coming back from a freaking Achilles and looking that good, it's incredible.
If we're applying that logic, it might be Galaxy Brain to bring on Kevin Love. He hasn't played a lot.
He's really well rested.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, especially, it's a good point about the bubble. Like, so many of those guys were so mentally fatigued afterward, and this is going to be a much shorter trip, but you know, it might be helpful to have some guys who haven't had that experience before, so they're not just like actively dreading, oh God, here we go again. Because it sounds like they are going to be bubbled when they get to Tokyo.
It's sounding rough over there. I don't know if you guys heard the game four low post game with Michael Malone. There were players on the team when they got swept on the Nuggets that were like, honestly, thank God we can take a break now after the bubble and then all this. Like, it's just funny the perspectives, because I know Bobby Portis was like, me not being in the bubble pissed me off and made me seek out the Bucks because I wanted to be with those teams. But the teams who have gone through it are like, Jesus, this has been just exhausting. It's been a wild time. And yeah, hopefully the Olympics goes well. It's early signs are not great safety-wise, but we'll see.
Give Bobby Kevin Love's spot.
I think he'd probably do pretty well.
Well,
I think you'd be a good FIBA player.
It sounds like this is from Adam Zagoria, who writes everywhere. Looks like they're looking at Julius Randle, Duncan Robinson, or Tobias Harris among the possible replacements for Bradley Beal. So Robinson at least adds shooting. Tobias is another kind of do-it-all forward. Randle probably makes the most sense in terms of if we're trying to add another big player, but at the same time...
I don't know.
Yeah, defensively, I don't know. And also, like, you know, again, I think it all comes back to beyond just the foul-baiting ref stuff. Developing a hierarchy. Like, I agree with you guys. KD should be the number one scorer. Like, the offense should run through him. We saw what he did in the playoffs. There is no question that when that guy is on, he's still one of the best basketball players on the planet. We, you know, Team USA has incredible players up and down the roster, but as much as I love Dame, as much as I love Levine, as much as I sort of like Tatum, Kevin Durant is the number one by far. So he needs to be the alpha, and it needs to trickle down from there. I also don't know if it's a coincidence that the one game Jason Tatum misses, that's the one they win by 28.
Oh my God. It is amazing with you. You are just actively trying to alienate every single Boston listener ever. God.
Yeah, that is correct. That is correct.
By the way, while I have the word here, Grand Afseth on Twitter is reporting that Trailblazers superstar Damian Lillard has his eyes on the New York Knicks among trade destinations in the event he were to be dealt, per a source.
I'm fine with that, honestly. That works. Sixers horrifies me. Yep. Lakers horrifies me. Like, if he wants to go to New York and they ship out their few good players for him, cool. That's fine. We can... Yep. He can wave goodbye to somebody in the first round and then lose in five games to the Bucks. That works for me.
Honestly, that I don't get this either. I like Julius Randle, don't get me wrong, but I don't think he is anywhere near a fitting secondary star next to him. I mean,
would they even hold on to him? Like, I mean, Randle and RJ still doesn't feel like close to enough, but I mean, I don't know. I don't see how that would get done, but we'll see.
I have to assume that Barrett would go in.
You would hope. Yeah, I mean, let's see how fired Neil Olshey wants to get. I think the Pelicans would be sneakily a lot of fun. Like B.I. and a bunch of picks and some of those young guys like Zion and Dame. I'd be okay with that. I think that'd be super fun. And like, I don't want three superstars together. Two, you make a new like duo. I'm cool with that.
Yep.
I don't think it's even possible, but like if it's AD, LeBron, and Dame, like that's just stupid, dude. Like, get out of here with that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess I was about to say Kawhi and PG and Dame, but yeah, we're not going to see Kawhi for a while. Yeah. Well, we'll have a whole Damian Lillard trade pod next episode, probably.
Yep. God. Now we know what we'll be talking about on Sunday
for the next like 3 weeks. All right, cool. Well, Ty, thank you again for joining us today. This was great. Could you let our listeners know one more time where they can find you on Twitter and where they can find your work?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys so much for having me. It was a great convo. I'm at Twitter at Ty Windisch, TiWindisch. And you can find most of what I do. I mean, a lot of tweets, but mostly it's just the podcast these days. So you can find it wherever you get wherever you're listening to this terrific podcast, Eurostep Podcast Network. We joined forces with another Bucks pod. So we have four hosts on there, tons of great content, post games, more pods. Like, It's been an exhausting run, but it's been great, and we've gotten a lot of support, which we really appreciate. So go on the platform, subscribe to that pod. You already, of course, subscribe to the NBA pod. And if you haven't yet, leave them a 5-star rating and review. Leave us a 5-star rating and review over there if you enjoyed this episode. Or if you didn't, like, leave a 5-star, and you can type whatever you want. Say, I don't actually like you that much, but you can still have 5 stars. We're cool with that. But definitely appreciate the support and you guys having me on.
Of course, man. And best of luck throughout the next couple days. Honestly, this is the first finals, and I don't even remember how long, where I'm rooting for both teams. Like, I don't care who wins. This is going to be great either way. But best of luck to you and all Bucks fans. I cannot imagine the anxiety right now, but I will never get to feel that. So, hooray for me. please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And as Ty said, if you want to talk trash in the comments, especially if you're a Boston fan, I have it coming. Just leave the 5 stars and then tell me just how bad Ben Simmons is. Go right ahead.
Tell him, also not me. Just don't target me. Don't punish me for this man's sins.
That's fair. And we are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen and by our special guest, Ty Windisch. Have a good weekend, guys. Enjoy the rest of the finals.
You too, man.